The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Harold Pitcairn. Rick Pitcairn, I should say. He's the CIO of Pitcairn Trust, a family wealth management office that is headquartered in Philadelphia. So, Peggy, always great to have you.
Great to be here on Friday.
And Rick, always great to have
you. How are you, Kathleen? Good to see you again.
Perfect marriage of guests. So, I'd just like to throw up a very specific question on the table to you first, Rick, because Russian, Putin, Ukraine, as a wealth manager, I'm assuming that you haven't changed a portfolio, your strategy hasn't changed, but how do you watch that, and what kind of questions are you getting from customers?
We're getting some questions. I think global geopolitics is an unpredictable wild card that comes into the marketplace. And I've been likening it a little bit to the tragedy that befell us with Fukushima a few years back, whereby it really captured the market for a brief period of time. But if you could step back and look at a little bit longer term window, it really didn't have a fundamental inflection point into the marketplace. And I think that's what we're dealing with here.
Peggy.
Well, Rick, I was wondering if you could tell some of our readers the differences between family offices, which you're a part of at Pitcairn, and wealth management or investment advisory firms in general. What is it that differentiates how you deal with families from some of the investment advisory firms out there?
It's an excellent question. And I think one of the issues, there's a lot of cloudiness in the marketplace. The family office is more of a community than it is an industry, and there's a lot of different firms that say they're family offices. They really solely focus on the investment side. To our way of thinking, a family office is an entity that really looks at the holistic issues that face a complex multi-generational family of wealth and try to solve sort of a simultaneous equation of investments, taxation, trust, and family succession all at once. It's a much different undertaking than a simple financial sale.
And the interesting thing is, you've told us before, there are several, probably several hundred family offices, which means several thousand families that need this.
There are very many families that need it, and traditionally, many families have focused on just the investment portion. You know, the investment portion's quantifiable. You guys deal with it all day long, and these other things are a little bit softer and a little bit harder for families to get their arms around, but that doesn't mean it's any less important to the success of that family over the generations.
And what we've seen in the family office space is that many of these firms started off managing the money for one family, like a family that created its own business, like a Michael Dell has a single family office, created their own business, like were super successful, liquidated that, and then moved on. But there's been a lot of consolidation, right? A lot of multifamily offices now that are managing the money. Are you seeing that more and more of that, Rick?
You're seeing a blend. You know, our family office started in 1923 because my great-grandfather very successfully started PPG Industries, and it's gone on into its fifth and sixth generation. Other firms don't have a family start. They come out of a bank, or maybe they roll into a bank. And I think that goes to explain some of those different cultures and some of the reasons that there's so many different platforms that call themselves family office.
So, Rick, stocks, bonds, commodities, that's what a lot of people think about. But more and more we're hearing about alternative investments, very broad category, real estate, still maybe master limited partnerships, etc. What are you offering your clients? Are you pushing them or suggesting they move in that direction? Are you getting inquiries? Are people looking more towards other kinds of investments right now?
I think that what our job is to provide excellent advice to these families. And it has traditionally been, it's been since I've been chief investment officer, a diverse, strategically based portfolio executed over long term with the best managers in the world wins. It's won very well for us, done very well for us over the past few years. That includes those asset classes that you spoke of. We're at a real turning point in this market right now as regards interest rates. We're all looking at Janet Yellen's chairmanship of the Fed to see what kind of policy she's going to bring and what kind of leader she's going to bring. And there's certainly a risk that we're at this 30-year low in interest rates. So as we look at that marketplace, other lowly volatile assets that we could put in besides a core fixed income portfolio make a lot of sense. So you'll see that in our portfolios.
And have you seen a shift since the financial crisis in 2008, 2009 in any types of investments that families are asking for less of or more of?
I think in the 2009 timeframe, it was a real challenge for us to try to get families to stick with a long-term strategic plan. The fear that was in the marketplace in 2008-2009 framework really hasn't even decreased all that much, even today as we sit here and look at the marketplace. So it was a lot of work for us to keep families in a long-term strategic plan. Thankfully, we were able to do it, and they've been very successful because of it. An effort of several leading global multifamily offices to expand their intellectual capital in the realm of investments. It may be soon that we expand that beyond just the investment portion of what we do for families, but for right now, it's chief investment officers and their investment teams who get together either in person or on phone frequently, travel around the world to try to make sure that we're delivering the best in asset allocation and the best investment managers in the world to the clients that we all serve.
Rick, what's changed that has made you come together as firms? Because traditionally, family offices tended to be somewhat private, secret by nature. And so this is somewhat of a shift. Why?
I think that for a while now, it's really hard, even if you were a U.S.-based family with U.S.-based assets, to not have a global perspective on your wealth. And I think it's very important for families to have that global perspective. And it was a way that we as a group could leverage off of each other's expertise rather than like the investment banks who might put 30 people in Singapore or 20 people in India to be able to, in a real cost-efficient way, make good decisions for our families and still stay inclusive of all the good thinking that's available if you have a global perspective.
And you've come together most recently in March in Big Sky, Montana, did you say? And Brazil was in September. Can you give us an example of something that came out of that meeting that where you took it back to your firm or your clients that was different than before, what you were doing before?
Well, a year ago, we met in Frankfurt right at the apex of the Cyprus crisis. And we had several of the ECB officials who came through. And, you know, for example, if you notice, the global balance sheets of central bankers are expanding. The ECB was contracting at the time. It's still contracting at the time. And that was a little bit hard for us to figure. And after our interaction with some of these central bankers, we understood their perspective better. We thought that it really didn't say a dire thing about Europe. And we came back with a more firm idea that, you know, the European spreads would do what the European spreads have done, which is to come back in and you see a much lower level of anxiety around that marketplace than you had 12 or 18 months ago.
What do you think is the interest of, say, central bankers in Europe to get together with a half a dozen or so family wealth managers? Why do they take the time? What do you think is their purpose?
I think that one of the advantages of a collaboration like this is many of the families who represent these offices are very established in their home countries. They've been there a long time. They've represented successful businesses for a long time. And they have the ability to pull, sometimes in those foreign countries, even more prominent people at the table than we might have here in the U.S. I'm not going to get Chairman Yellen to come speak to our group, probably because of the difficulties in doing that. But in some of these other markets, we can get that level of insight and come back with that and make it come alive in our allocations for our clients.
I'm fascinated by the model. I wonder if there isn't sometimes a little bit of competition that creeps in, or does everybody decide that they're trusting everybody else? They will offer up their ideas freely and it hasn't been violated yet.
We've tried to geographically structure it to where we're not overtly competing for clients so that we can really be open as investment thinkers when we sit around that table. I think the real success of it is something that you really can't predict. It's a chemistry of those of us who are the investment thinkers where we're able to, in a relaxed way, really challenge each other and be open about our positioning and our thought processes so that we can get better for all our clients. So it's so far, I think it's we have respected that that boundary. I think as we grow, that's going to be a challenge for the organization.
How much of this, Rick, is driven by a desire to get unbiased research and information? You know, you were talking about the ECB officials talking to you directly, as opposed to going through one of the big financial institutions or a private equity firm or a hedge fund manager that's sending the research around. How much of it is somewhat of a shift in trust of those institutions themselves and people wanting to get the information directly?
Well, I think in many instances, many of the members of Wigmore would compete against those very same banks that have that infrastructure on the ground. And so our promise to our clients is we're going to sit on your side of the table and we're going to deliver to you the best investment advice in the world, and we're going to do that in an unbiased way. And many times you have to do that directly. And I think that was part of the idea of the impetus of the group of let's get the scale to be able to make some of these decisions in a one-on-one way, because we think they'll be more meaningful. And they have been more meaningful. It's actually worked really well for all members.
Are family wealth offices growing in the sense that families are still trusting, you know, offices as opposed to banks, for example?
I think that the family office promise that it's really going to be a solutions-based advice and not a product placement augurs in favor of that family office model. The bank models are still predominantly product placement. We're going to put you in this portfolio, we're going to put you in that portfolio. The family office promise is, you know, as a wealth creator with a complex family, we have all these inputs from Bloomberg Radio, inputs from the TV, inputs from investment managers who all want to sell you their product. They need somebody to give them unbiased advice, sit on their side of the table, and help them succeed. And that's the promise of family office.
So talk to us about 2014. We've been talking a lot about what you've learned in the past, but where are clients going, or where are you telling them to go in the markets right now?
I think that 2014 is a year of consolidation. It is not last year. But if you look at it, it's quite frankly looks a lot like the consolidation phrase of a normal secular bull market. Secular bull market consolidations aren't down 20 years. They're down 2, up 3. You know, we came a long way from a multiple expansion perspective in 2013, and we need a period of time to consolidate that back.
Well, Rick, the last big bull, what, started in 82, went to 2000 in stocks?
Correct.
How long is this one going to run?
Well, that's pretty hard to say. What I can say is I sort of look for three things as I look for that longevity of the market. I look for an inverted yield curve. I do not see that. I look for overenthusiasm of stocks. I see some change in sentiment in the institutional community, but I don't see it in the retail investor.
Number three.
Excessive valuations. They're normal. They're pushed. They're not excessive.
Rick Pitcairn, thank you so very much.
An effort of several leading global multifamily offices to expand their intellectual capital in the realm of investments. It may be soon that we expand that beyond just the investment portion of what we do for families, but for right now, it's chief investment officers and their investment teams who get together either in person or on phone frequently, travel around the world to try to make sure that we're delivering the best in asset allocation and the best investment managers in the world to the clients that we all serve.
Rick, what's changed that has made you come together as firms? Because traditionally, family offices tended to be somewhat private, secret by nature. And so this is somewhat of a shift. Why?
I think that for a while now, it's really hard, even if you were a U.S.-based family with U.S.-based assets, to not have a global perspective on your wealth. And I think it's very important for families to have that global perspective. And it was a way that we as a group could leverage off of each other's expertise rather than like the investment banks who might put 30 people in Singapore or 20 people in India to be able to, in a real cost-efficient way, make good decisions for our families and still stay inclusive of all the good thinking that's available if you have a global perspective.
And you've come together most recently in March in Big Sky, Montana, did you say? And Brazil was in September. Can you give us an example of something that came out of that meeting that where you took it back to your firm or your clients that was different than before, what you were doing before?
Well, a year ago, we met in Frankfurt right at the apex of the Cyprus crisis. And we had several of the ECB officials who came through. And, you know, for example, if you notice, the global balance sheets of central bankers are expanding. The ECB was contracting at the time. It's still contracting at the time. And that was a little bit hard for us to figure. And after our interaction with some of these central bankers, we understood their perspective better. We thought that it really didn't say a dire thing about Europe. And we came back with a more firm idea that, you know, the European spreads would do what the European spreads have done, which is to come back in and you see a much lower level of anxiety around that marketplace than you had 12 or 18 months ago.
What do you think is the interest of, say, central bankers in Europe to get together with a half a dozen or so family wealth managers? Why do they take the time? What do you think is their purpose?
I think that one of the advantages of a collaboration like this is many of the families who represent these offices are very established in their home countries. They've been there a long time. They've represented successful businesses for a long time. And they have the ability to pull, sometimes in those foreign countries, even more prominent people at the table than we might have here in the U.S. I'm not going to get Chairman Yellen to come speak to our group, probably because of the difficulties in doing that. But in some of these other markets, we can get that level of insight and come back with that and make it come alive in our allocations for our clients.
I'm fascinated by the model. I wonder if there isn't sometimes a little bit of competition that creeps in, or does everybody decide that they're trusting everybody else? They will offer up their ideas freely and it hasn't been violated yet.
We've tried to geographically structure it to where we're not overtly competing for clients so that we can really be open as investment thinkers when we sit around that table. I think the real success of it is something that you really can't predict. It's a chemistry of those of us who are the investment thinkers where we're able to, in a relaxed way, really challenge each other and be open about our positioning and our thought processes so that we can get better for all our clients. So it's so far, I think it's we have respected that that boundary. I think as we grow, that's going to be a challenge for the organization.
How much of this, Rick, is driven by a desire to get unbiased research and information? You know, you were talking about the ECB officials talking to you directly, as opposed to going through one of the big financial institutions or a private equity firm or a hedge fund manager that's sending the research around. How much of it is somewhat of a shift in trust of those institutions themselves and people wanting to get the information directly?
Well, I think in many instances, many of the members of Wigmore would compete against those very same banks that have that infrastructure on the ground. And so our promise to our clients is we're going to sit on your side of the table and we're going to deliver to you the best investment advice in the world. And we're going to do that in an unbiased way. And many times you have to do that directly. And I think that was part of the idea of the impetus of the group of let's get the scale to be able to make some of these decisions in a one-on-one way because we think they'll be more meaningful. And they have been more meaningful. It's actually worked really well for all members.
Are family wealth offices growing in the sense that families are still trusting, you know, offices as opposed to banks, for example?
I think that the family office promise that it's really going to be a solutions-based advice and not a product placement augurs in favor of that family office model. The bank models are still predominantly product placement. We're going to put you in this portfolio. We're going to put you in that portfolio. The family office promise is, you know, as a wealth creator with a complex family, we have all these inputs, inputs from Bloomberg Radio, inputs from the TV, inputs from investment managers who all want to sell you their product. They need somebody to give them unbiased advice, sit on their side of the table and help them succeed. And that's the promise of family office.
So talk to us about 2014. We've been talking a lot about what you've learned in the past, but where are clients going or where are you telling them to go in the markets right now?
I think that 2014 is a year of consolidation. It is not last year. But if you look at it, it's quite frankly looks a lot like the consolidation phrase of a normal secular bull market. Secular bull market consolidations aren't down 20 years. They're down 2, up 3. You know, we came a long way from a multiple expansion perspective in 2013, and we need a period of time to consolidate that back.
Well, Rick, the last big bull, what, started in 82, went to 2000 in stocks?
Correct.
How long is this one going to run?
Well, that's pretty hard to say. What I can say is I sort of look for three things as I look for that longevity of the market. I look for an inverted yield curve. I do not see that. I look for overenthusiasm of stocks. I see some change in sentiment in the institutional community, but I don't see it in the retail investor.
Number three.
Excessive valuations. They're normal. They're pushed. They're not excessive.
Rick Pitcairn, thank you so very much.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.